5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
It's the new Panic Room Radio Show, brought to you by Hellbound Books Publishing. Experienced publishers of horror, noir, bizarro, and all things dark in paperback, ebook, and audiobook. You can find us at www.hellboundbooks.com. But first, get your feet up and enjoy the show.
Good evening, one and all. It is the what is it? It's the new Panic Room, more than likely. So I'm still suffering with this bloody cold. Can't shift the damn thing. There you go, just to prove it. A little bit of a cough there, but yeah, it's week three of the plague, and I'm still struggling to say more than three sentences without coughing a lung up, but hey, I got two lungs, so I can power through this. But speaking of powering through things,
come on, I'm with you.
Yeehaw, and you doing, Christina? How are you doing?
Oh, it's been a long week.
Oh,
you know, and I keep
saying it. Yeah.
So yeah, it's just been a long week. I had a great weekend. I went up to Kentucky, and I absolutely love Kentucky. And it was just a lot of fun. We stayed at that creepy schoolhouse turned inn, and it's supposedly haunted. Although I do have to say, I'm a little skeptical about why it's haunted. Because, like, what did all the kids drown? Or I mean, you know what I mean? Why is the school haunted? It's just that it was just a normal school, and I know school can be pretty haunting. But you know, I mean, anyway. But no,
well, maybe it's haunted by the. By the ghosts of all the crushed dreams.
Oh, you know, that could be. But this is
and
our
the
third time
spirits.
There. Again,
yeah.
No ghosts. But,
well,
a
bit of a letdown. You think they'd lay on a spook or two for you. Even if it was like Scooby-Doo, even if it was the janitor in a mask little sheet. And a mask or a projection, you know, because they always have these projectors that can project ghosts and what have you.
Right.
That, they could have done that. I mean, they did it on Scooby-Doo. It can't be that difficult.
We took my aunt because she's been wanting to go. And the next morning, and I came out of my room, and she thought we were in the room right next to her. So she was banging on the wall and on the door and everything. So whoever was in that room probably is holy crap.
Probably didn't sleep a wink. We were terrified all night, bless them.
Yes. So that was pretty funny. But no, I had a great time. This week has sucked. So, you know, that kind of stuff.
I know.
But,
you know, Sam, it's because, I mean, last week I battled through the show and I was, you know, your show must go on. I remember the week before that. So this is getting into my third week of this bloody cold. And I know, I mean, I know people who've had this and it's kind of a bit of a tenacious one. But it's funny, I was speaking to my agent in New York the other day and I said, yeah, I'm still struggling with this. And, oh, it could be COVID. You should get tested. Well, why? Well, because it could be COVID. Yeah, but what if it is? What will you tell me to do? Well, rest up at home and take cold meds for the symptoms. Well,
that's what I'm doing
anyway. So really, and the thing I do like, you know, whenever there's a new strain or whatever coming up, and it's in the papers and that, and they always print a picture of the virus, like in case you see one. Like, I mean, how big do they think these? Oh, there's one. There it is. There's the new COVID strain virus floating by, you know. And you know, if you look at these things, are like as big as a grapefruit. And it's like, well, like, just in case I see it. Well, really, that's not how they work. But it's just this paranoia about COVID. It's still with us. Like, it could be COVID. Well, so, I know it's funny, I read an article in a British, because I keep it with the British papers, going on about, oh, there's a new strain. Because obviously, it's a coronavirus, which means it mutates its protein coat every year, every 18 months or whatever, because that's how they adapt to survive. Mm-hmm. And they're saying, you know, well, it's not severe, you know, you don't lose your taste, you don't this, there's not, so you may experience some sniffles and a sore throat and a headache. So it's like a cold day. It's literally, you've described the symptoms of a mild cold. You know, people are panicking. It's just, for fuck's sake, take some NyQuil, fuck off to bed, get over it. You know, he said.
Yeah.
And it's funny, if I now die of pneumonia, you'll have the last laugh. So, well, it serves you right, Jimbo. Serves you right for being a smart ass.
You know, I get the memories on Facebook from, like, you know, a year ago, 2 years ago, 4 years ago, and I'm seeing all the COVID times come up, and I'm thinking, wow, that was a wild year. Well, you know, that really was. I feel the same way. I mean, even now, as soon as you get sick, oh my God, I hope it's not COVID. And I'm like, well, I did that a couple of years ago, and it did suck. But
you remember, I had COVID before it was popular.
You did.
You know,
and it kept you down for a while.
It put me on my ass for a couple of weeks. But
yeah,
so what? You know, I'm, you know, so what? I got, it was no worse that I've had bouts of flu. To be fair, I've had hangovers worse than that, to be honest with you. You know, I once had a 4-day red wine hangover. I remember a friend of mine, company I worked for back in England, we did a promotion with Rioja wine. We gave away Rioja wine. This thing, I mean, it was like 14.5% proof. So it's pretty, pretty potent. And so I had cases of this stuff kicking around. And my friend and his, because this was my first wife, my friend and his wife just popped in and didn't have any beer in. So we hit the red wine and God knows how many bottles we drank. And I was ill 4 days. Oh my, it was a long time before I touched red wine again. I mean, I'd like a sip of red wine now, but oh my goodness, that was one of the worst hangovers I ever, we had a good night, it was a fun night. I remember going out in the backyard at like 1 a.m, me and him playing on the kiddie's slide. Because the kids had built a little slide for the kids in the backyard, and we were playing on that, absolutely out of our trees. It was great fun. All good stuff.
God.
But now, you know, it's fun now. It's funny, I was speaking to somebody, you know, and she was saying, you know, she now her kids are grown up and that, you know, she likes to party, likes to drink, and that's her thing, and I like to drink. And that, it's like, well, I've been there. You know, I don't want...
Yeah.
I know it makes me sound like a sad, sad old man, but I don't want to do that. You know, I wrote off so many weekends, so many Sundays. You know, it's nice. I mean, it's nice to have a couple of beers and whatnot, but not to the point of making myself ill. And that was literally every weekend I was, and sometimes in the week, if I had a company event or I was entertaining clients, sometimes in the week as well, you know, it's like, how the fuck did I do that? It's a wonder, seriously, either, you know, my liver is is teetering. Or I've got the world's toughest liver because it's lived through that. And, you know, it can deal with anything now. But as they say, you know, if you can get away with it when you do it in your 20s and 30s and then you stop. And you get to my advanced years, you know, if you're sensible, you're okay. It's when you're drinking heavily at this age, when your body doesn't recover. I think once you get past sort of 35, your liver takes twice as long to process the toxins and the alcohol, which is now why I'm a lightweight now. I mean, you know, 2 or 3 beers and I'm done. I'm absolutely done.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I margarita and I'm like, ooh, I'm a cheese.
Do you know what I like? they do them in a few places. Margarita with a beer stuck in it. You have a big, massive margarita with a Dos Equis stuck in it, and I love those. And one of those I'm anybody's, to be honest. But then again, I'm pretty much anybody's for a pack of wine gum these days. So you know, I am that cheap. But anyway, enough of my sad little social life. What is going on the show this evening?
I am super excited. We're two guests on tonight.
Woo!
And we're gonna have them both on together and have a party. But I did want to say we have Jeff Strandback, and I do not think we've talked to him yet this year. So you know, it's been like we've had him.
Sure? I'm sure he's been on. I'm sure we snuck him on. I'm sure we've snuck him on this year.
I don't think so. You know, I can go back in my notes and check, but
not,
I don't think
not,
he's talked to
It would not be the I panic know. Room without Jeff on it. He's always
know.
A favorite, always entertaining. I'm looking forward to chatting with him again.
Okay, so yes, tonight on the Panic Room, we have Bram Stoker Award-winning author Jeff Strands and 2-time Splatterpunk Award winner Bridget Nelson. Woo!
Hello, guys.
Hello. How are you doing?
We're good. I must admit, Jeff. Thanks to Bridget. I'm struggling with the mental image of you in the shower right now. So I do apologise if I seem a little bit distracted.
No need to apologise.
Thank you for that, Bridget. I really appreciate that. That's great.
My pleasure.
No, my pleasure, to be honest. So if I go quiet during the show, you know what's going on at this end.
As long as it's not too quiet.
Yeah, I was going to say, maybe he's just somewhere coughing. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
so,
yeah, I'll try not to cough too much.
My first question of the night is, how are you guys liking Minnesota? And isn't it really super cold?
It is not. And I am a longtime Floridian who has gradually crept up north but never lived in a cold place. And this has been a freakishly mild winter up until the last couple of days. So, yeah, everyone is telling me in their charming Duluth accents, you know, oh, it's a very mild winter. But so it has been nothing like the hype.
Well, they're just warming you up, hopefully. Or not hopefully. Hopefully that this is all you get. Yeah. You know, I have relatives up in upstate New York, and they just had snow the other day. And I'm like, that is just, you know, I have flowers starting to bloom. So, excuse my dog.
No, we got clobbered with snow.
we
cancel a visit to Justin Holly's book signing because the roads were canceled. So.
Oh my God! Well, we've had. I mean, this is Houston. You know, we it got a little bit chilly earlier. This I had to put a thicker pair of shorts on, and that's pretty much it. It's been a t-shirt with sleeves on it. You know, because it was a bit nippy. But you know, it's been in high 70s and 80s this week. It's been like you say, the flowers are blooming, the butterflies are out. I did a bit of gardening last week. It's nice. And then again, give it another, what we have in April, May. 2 months and it'll be too bloody hot to go outside. So good old Texas. Loving it. Absolutely loving it.
Yeah. No, I got heated gloves, a heated jacket and everything, and I never had to use it. So.
Well, boo. Aww. Boo.
Oh my goodness. But yeah, Jeff, you were here. There are two books. I'm seeing right here that you have two books to talk about tonight.
Right.
Do you sleep at all, or is it just like a vampire? Or?
Not pretty much a vampire thing. It's really, this is because one of them was self-published, Creep Out. So it came out basically once it was ready to go. The other one is traditionally published. So it would be, you know, bookstores and everything. And that's been done for like a year and a half. So it's basically just coincidence that they both came out so fast. It's not that I wrote Creep Out and then really quickly wrote it, Watch in the Dark. Watch in the Dark has been done since 2022. Just things have a much slower publication rate when they're with the big publisher.
Right. It does seem like you do put out books a lot faster than some, though. So I wasn't really too surprised. I really wasn't. I was like, oh, well, yeah, he's got two books. Why wouldn't he have two books right now?
He probably wrote another one while he was waiting to come on the show.
Yeah.
To be honest.
In the show.
While, while we were doing the intro, he probably just rattled off another novel. But I
get a lot done.
Exactly, yeah. I know I've asked you before, Jim. I mean, what sort of, do you set yourself a daily word target? Or how do you manage your time that way?
It varies depending on how close I am to the deadline. So, like, I have a word count goal for my next book, which is due at the end of April and is, you know, in very early stages. But it's a short book, so it'll be fine. I'm a professional. I've done this lots of times. But you know, with each passing day, the word count goes up. So at some point, I need to just sit down and...
Just so I can feel inadequate. I mean, what sort of word count do you aim for on a daily basis?
Like for this book, I'll give you the exact. So, counting for the fact that I'm going to be going to AuthorCon, and that's going to be a fairly long road trip as well. So, making a detour into North Carolina to finish Finders Keepers, the third book in my Eek series, even though the first one doesn't come out until Tuesday, I have to write 1,739 words a day, which is a manageable, reasonable amount.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, every day that I don't get, like I spent all day today working on taxes, so I didn't actually, so the word count went up from where it was yesterday. So it keep climbing until I start digging into this.
Awesome.
Sounds about like my deadlines.
Yeah, let's not get into your deadline and adherence to or not. It's funny whenever I openly admit it, I give Xtina a deadline because she does formatting and editing and editing all that sort of stuff as well for Hellbound Books. And I always build in like a week's cushion, knowing damn well she's going to miss the deadline. But the thing is, now she knows that, she knows she's got a week on top of whatever. So I'm going to have to readjust this, you know?
I think I'm getting better, though. But yes, Jeff, let's talk about
No, you're not. You're not getting better at all. No.
So for a little while, Let's see. I like the cover, and it did remind me of all the creepy dolls that I have all around the house. And after inheriting a ventriloquist dummy, Ezra finds himself trapped in a ravine with a spooky living doll. Tell us a little bit more about it.
It is basically my contribution to the creepy evil ventriloquist doll trope. So.
Yeah.
That's pretty self-explanatory.
Yeah, I was going to say, after I read the tagline, it pretty much, there you have it. But I don't think I've ever read any creepy ventriloquist dummies books. I did see a really creepy episode. Yeah, you know, it really is, yeah. So we're definitely going to run out of time tonight for everything I want to do. So before too long, how about do you have an excerpt that you're going to read for us from Creep Out?
Sure. Yep, this is from Creep Out. All you need to know is that Ezra is the one who inherited the doll, and Virgil is the doll. And he is driving home, unaware that anything is going on with the doll, which has been in the passenger seat in a seatbelt.
Nice.
The 60s station was on a roll, playing kick-ass song after kick-ass song, but they took it to the next level when Steppenwolf started. Oh, hell yeah, said Ezra, cranking it up even louder. Sing this shit with me, Virgil. Ezra belted out the lyrics to Born to Be Wild, tapping his hands on the steering wheel for added emphasis of the awesomeness of the song. He was a terrible, terrible singer. They didn't care. At least he knew all the correct lyrics. The entire song was a masterpiece, but the actual Born to Be Wild line was perhaps the finest few seconds in music's history. He sang it with unrestrained passion. An unfamiliar voice joined in on Wild. Ezra was so startled, he slammed on the brakes, quickly realizing that slamming on the brakes while doing 79 miles per hour on the highway with a truck behind him was not a good idea. He resumed his speed and pulled into the right lane. He glanced at Virgil. Had he caught a glimpse of the dummy's head moving in his peripheral vision? Of course he hadn't. Jesus, why would he even think that? Not only was it ridiculous that a ventriloquist dummy would sing along with him, but the music was cranked up, the wind was rushing through the open window, and he'd been singing at top volume himself. If the dummy or anybody else had made any noise, he wouldn't have heard it. No big deal. He wasn't losing his sanity. He was on his way home from his father's funeral with a creepy doll sitting next to him. It was completely normal to have a very brief moment where his imagination messed with him. That said, maybe Virgil should go back in his box. No, that would be a failure of sanity. If he felt he needed to hide the dummy away to keep himself from believing that it had come to life, he was in bad shape. Virgil was fine. And if he was alive, well, the dummy had excellent taste in music. Ezra kept driving. When he stopped to get gas, he took a picture of Virgil with his cell phone and texted it to his sister. The perfect conversationalist. He only says what I want him to. She responded with a smiley face. Ezra went inside to pee and buy another energy drink, then resumed his drive home. About 30 minutes later, right around sunset, he started the part of the trip that sucked. 80 miles on a two-lane, twisty, hilly West Virginia road. Opportunities to pass other vehicles were rare. On the way up, he'd spent 45 minutes stuck behind a truck that was going 10 miles below the speed limit. That was far more damaging to his sanity than a ventriloquist dummy. Within 5 minutes, he was once again stuck behind a truck, although this one was only going 8 miles below the speed limit. Quite honestly, he shouldn't be speeding on a road like this at the dark anyway, so he kept the teeth gnashing to a minimum. A car tailgating him flashed his headlights. What did the driver think he was going to do, pass this truck on a curve? He gave a light tap of his brakes to suggest the driver back the fuck off. He passed the moment it was safe, and hopefully it would be such a narrow window of opportunity that it left this jackass trapped behind the truck for the next hour. What a douchebag, he said to Virgil. Virgil was not in his seat. Well, of course he was. He had to be. But no, Virgil was not, in fact, in the passenger seat anymore. The seatbelt was still fastened, but Virgil wasn't there. This wasn't a trick of the shadows or his imagination. The dummy was gone. And that was an excerpt from Creep Out.
Oh, I have to say, with my love of creepy dolls and the fact that I have so many of them, I'm not sure if reading this book would be in my best interest.
I think it totally is. I think the insanity is worth it.
There's a movie called Magic, I think Anthony Hopkins, many, many years ago. I remember reading the book, and again, it was about a possessed or haunted ventriloquist. I've always found those things very sinister looking anyway. They always creep me out anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, you don't have to do a lot of work with a ventriloquist dummy to make
I think the whole concept... is just, who thought of that? You know, I mean, I never found it that entertaining. It's a bloke talking to himself. And sometimes you think, he's clever. That sometimes even you could never see the lips move. You could always see the throat moving. So you knew what was going on, you know. And sometimes there was a few that were funny. That, you know, it was a funny act, whether it had been a double act or... if the guy had developed the comedy act as a stand-up, it would have been great. But they had these dummies, and they were just, like, just freaky, you know. No.
So what made you decide to write about a possessed ventriloquist dummy?
A lot of times when I'm writing a new horror novel, it's just, okay, what haven't I done yet? So, like, Watching the Dark, which comes out Tuesday, that was... I've never done folk horror, so what am I going to do with folk horror? And Creep Out was, the ventriloquist dummy. It's, you know, been done. It's always creepy. It always works. Mm. But I thought, what's my own twist on it? And so the twist with Creep Out is that it is the possessed ventriloquist dummy story mixed with survival horror. Without giving anything away, something very bad happens on the rest of the drive home, and then he's sort of trapped with the dummy trying to escape. So I thought, the ventriloquist dummy stories are no one believes the little girl that her best friend, the dummy, is alive or whatever the dummy's telling him to kill. So I wanted to do a different twist on it, but still it's, you know, fully in the fine tradition of creepy ventriloquist dummy stories.
Yeah, I definitely think that with as many books as you've written, do you ever have trouble going, what should I do now? You've done everything. I mean, I guess you have not done everything, but you've done a lot. So I suppose it would be...
I've done a lot. There's a lot. The horror genre is very rich. Like, I haven't done a mummy book. I haven't done a big kaiju book. You know, so there's still plenty left for me to tackle.
I think I might have asked you this before, but if there was a genre that you have not written in, what would it be? If there was something you could do that you have not done yet?
I would like to do a full-on historical. Creep Out has flashbacks to 1938, which are sort of historical, but that's just a few chapters in the book. So I wouldn't, if I were going to tackle something and you know, I wasn't worried about all the extra time it would take to research. I would tackle a historical.
I was going to ask the same question. What sort of period would you go for?
Yes.
Probably pretty close to the Creep Out, sort of 20s, 30s, that kind of era. But probably something much more epic, so it covers lots of years.
Now, Bridget is being awfully quiet over there, but we do have her with us as well, here to talk to us about her book, Poisoned Pink. And, tell us a little bit about it. It is in one book, it's the What the Fuck Was That? And Sweet, Sour, and Spicy, right? Is that what?
Right.
Yeah,
yes, I really wanted to, have a bigger book and make a hardcover with it. And my other books were smaller, and I couldn't really make a hardcover with those. So I combined the two collections and added a bonus story, and that became Poison Pink. And it has a really cool cover with tarantulas that have roses, like are made from roses, and I really love it. It looks great.
It does. And I was going to say, when you make out that signed copy, it's XTINA. But I messed that up
last time, didn't I?
No, I don't know. That's my little joke. I try to pressure all of our authors into sending us books and or sending me books. I say us. James never gets any, but that's fine. And
hi, James. Thank you.
But
I'll buy my own.
Okay, now we have Jeff and Bridget, and both really great horror authors. Do you guys ever work together or write anything? I mean, you do have a story together, and was it an anthology that you had the story together in?
Yeah, it was Jack Bantry's Splatterpunk's Basement of Horror, and we wrote a story called Mac and Millie, and it was so much fun, and I would love to do it again. I just need to convince Jeff, but Jeff is not super huge on collaborations.
Yeah, it's funny that James, I don't think he'd be very good at collaborating with anyone, to be honest.
I did it once. I collaborated once, which that worked out quite well. We did a short story, and then it was adapted into a comic. It went in our first Bound for Hell edition, and funnily enough, actually, you do mock. I'm actually collaborating with the British comedian Joe Pasquale on a vampire novel.
Yes,
you remember Joe? Great guy. We published his collection last year. So I am actually collaborating, and so far so good. Joe and I are getting on really well with it.
Awesome. I was going to ask you how that was going, but so Bridget, how is Jeff to work with?
He's fun to work with.
The way she said that, I'm not quite convinced.
Pirates.
I mean, I wrote a part that I thought was hilarious, and Jeff was like, "No, it's not right."
I guess that's what I was wondering. Is one of you a little more, free and just like, hey, this sounds in another one a little more rigid, or did your styles complement each other pretty good?
Well, one of us is way more experienced. So, I have learned that no matter how funny something is, if it doesn't fit, if it's out of character or doesn't work with the tone of the overall piece, you had to cut it. And so it was like, yes, Christine, you wrote it, is extremely funny and entertaining, but it makes the character too goofy, and then it takes away from later. So I said, you're cutting it.
You could have had outtakes, at the end of the book, just be like, this didn't make it in, but I'd read those. I really would.
Oh, that would actually be a really fun idea. Yeah, that would be fun. I like that idea.
Yeah. So, Bridget, you had an excerpt to read for us, didn't you? From
very quick one. Just a little setup. So I'm reading from the story Ambush, which is the bonus story in Poison Pink. And basically, the setup is a couple is on a honeymoon in the Florida Keys. They decide to go on a scuba diving exhibition. I don't know what it's called, a scuba diving trip, a day trip. And things go horribly awry. And the section that I'm reading is kind of when the monster makes its appearance. This is not my typical extreme horror. This is more of a creature feature, so it's a little different for me. But this is a very short excerpt from Ambush. Despite her attempts at remaining calm, Cammie's breathing was rapid. She knew without looking that she was burning through the oxygen in her tank. She wasn't hyperventilating yet, but her respirations were rapid, more so than usual. After swimming to the Golden Reef, she had pointed out the spot where she'd last seen the couple. Then, taking Gage's hand, she had moved away to give Marcus and the crew space to work. As the three men examined the reef, trying to find some clue, or hopefully Jack's body, Cammie looked at Gage. He gave her the okay sign and squeezed her hand. Thankful for his calming presence, she found herself relaxing ever so slightly, until she saw something in the sand that made her want to vomit. Tiny white crabs feasting on the meat of what could only be Bev's severed leg. She signaled the others, and they all swam closer, eager for any clues. A not-so-subtle shifting of the water current redirected their attention. It felt as though something huge had passed, displacing tons of water in the process. Then the seabed itself began rippling. Cammie stared at the sandy ocean floor, wondering if they were experiencing an earthquake, which didn't make a hell of a lot of sense. Florida, unlike California or Alaska, was not sitting atop a tectonic plate boundary. Yet, it was most assuredly moving. Feeling another shift in the water, she turned and tried to scream past her regulator, a storm of bubbles exploding around her face. Coming out of the sandy seabed like some disgusting parasite sliding from a sickly dog's ass was what could only be described as a massive fucking centipede. And I'll stop there because I know we don't have a lot of time tonight. But, yeah, so this creature that I'm writing about is real. I know it probably a centipede in the ocean doesn't sound real, but it actually is real. It's called a sand striker, and it's not actually as big as I made it in the story, but it's creepy as hell, so...
I was going to say, James is going to want a copy of that book, but he's loves centipedes.
Not if he's got centipede in it. No, thank you very much indeed. So I was going to ask you something. I scuba diving. Have either of you guys ever done scuba diving?
I think and Jeff has. I have not.
And if so, why? Why? Why do people do that? Don't do that. It's just, it's funny because, obviously, again, no great secrets, and it's regular listeners to the show. I mean, I've been involved in the whole dating. And the number of, you know, seemingly eligible women who, you know, they put all scuba diving, I like to go scuba, will you go scuba diving with me? No, I won't. Because it's underwater. That's it, really. That's all the argument you need, isn't it, really? Oh, I'm going to immerse myself underwater with a limited amount of oxygen, and that'll be fun.
What could go wrong?
Exactly. How much fun? What I would rather do is be sat by the side of the water with a cold beer, breathing air as we are evolved to do so. You know, we came out of the oceans billions of years ago, so just don't do that.
Based on your feedback, I'll never do it again.
Thank you. We would hate to lose you, Jeff, because people die doing that. We don't want to lose you.
All right.
My goodness. Okay. And, I definitely do not want to miss talking about It Watches in the Dark. Now, is this one of the a YA book or, you know, younger,
it's
for the younger
middle
kids?
Grade. So it's middle
okay.
grade, so it's aged down just a bit, although it's, mm-hmm. you know, as dark and demented as most of my other stuff.
Tagline here, twins Oliver and Teresa trying to find help for their injured father locate a village where the residents worship a giant scarecrow. Now, again, with, you know, the dummy and the scarecrows are super creepy. They really, really are. But, yeah, that's a great trope there to write about is creepy scarecrows. Does it, like, come alive and, like, you know, yeah. I watched an episode of Supernatural with a scarecrow, and it just stuck in my head because the stupid scarecrow was just that creepy. So, you know, good on you for two different topics tonight that just creep me out, but maybe I'm just a wuss. So, so again,
I'm sure you're
with,
not just a wuss.
No, she is. She's an absolute scaredy cat. She's in totally the wrong job. I mean, to be honest with you, the last person that should be dealing with horror is Xtina because she's just so wussy.
It really is true. We went to that haunted inn over the weekend, and my aunt brought a spirit box, and we never got a chance to use it. But let me tell you, if anything creepy came across it or I experienced anything, we would not be staying there the next time I go to Kentucky.
Sorry, I'm going to sound ignorant here, but what is a spirit box, and what do they do?
I don't really know. It's like a radio. It's like a radio, and it just... Yeah, I don't know. I'll have to send you the link, but they use it on the ghost hunting shows, and it seems pretty creepy. So, and I did think it was fascinating, but again, if anything actually came through or, you know, I saw something, I almost think that ghosts know to avoid me because of how scared I actually would be. You know, I'm the person who gets up in the middle of the night to go, like, pee or something, and... I say to myself, okay, you know, if there is a demon, if there's a ghost or something, just don't look at it. Pretend like you don't notice it, and that way it won't mess with you. Yeah, even in my own house, I'm just a big chicken shit. I really am. But, yeah. So what makes the difference between, Jeff, between writing an adult horror novel and something for the younger kids? And what actually made you decide to write for a younger audience?
It really came, I'd worked with Source Books. I've been with them since, my first book with them came out in 2012, and I'd done 5 young adult novels, and those were all comedies. And my editor said, hey, would you be interested in doing middle grade for middle grade horror instead of comedy? And I said, yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
So that it really just came from, you know, a pre-existing relationship with the publisher, and they wanted me to try it. So I, you know, pitched them a few ideas. They picked the creepy scarecrow one. The difference between writing, in terms of my writing style, it's not that much different. It's like, it's the same as with young adult, where your main characters have to be, in this case, middle grades. You know, they're 12-year-olds. You don't have them as side characters. And it's not, you know, all the adults are also a big part of the story. Everything is from the point of view of the kids. And they have to solve their own problems. It's not, you know, the adults jump in to save the day.
Right.
For a horror novel, you know, it is a dark, demented book. There are limits. With young adult, there really aren't any limits. With middle grade, it's a little bit different. You know, there's no sex. And there are a couple bits where they ask me to reel back the intensity. Not too much, but it's slightly different. A lot of the stuff that I didn't think about was, you know, basically offensive language, not in terms of cursing or that stuff, but stuff like, trying to think of a good example, like a character was described as waddling across the street. The mayor waddles. And like my editor said, you can't actually say he's waddled because that's making fun of the way he walks.
Oh, goodness.
Which is not something you do in middle grade.
It's offensive like to ducks as well. A duck would be offended.
You don't want to offend ducks in middle grade. So
you do not.
Tighter restrictions because, you know, the audience is much younger. Young adults, they kind of, you know, you're not so much worried about the distinction between reality and fiction. Whereas in a middle grade, where you're saying, you know, you're crazy. Well, that's, you know, offensive to someone who is mentally ill. So it's that kind of stuff that I don't worry about at all in my adult stuff. Didn't really worry about in young adult. But in middle grade, you know, a lot of those books are going to be in schools, you know, recommended by teachers, you know, in the library. So that is a concern, and that's something where they reeled me back every once in a while. But if you're a fan of my adult stuff, this isn't like the completely watered-down version. It's a mean, nasty, you know, the ending is completely deranged, but they're just the little bits that
now,
I hadn't even thought about.
Now, is it difficult to, you know, write a middle age book and then like the next one it's a full, you know, adult horror? Is that weird to get your head in the right space?
No, I generally haven't had that issue because, you know, I've done books where I completely switch gears. You know, Kumquat's a romantic comedy, and so I'm not like in the middle of writing my middle grade book and dropping F-bombs because I was just writing a adult book. It's, my writing style itself doesn't change much or doesn't really change at all beyond what I've already talked about. So it's not like, well, this is my young adult, so I need, or this is my middle grade, I need shorter paragraphs and, you know, I don't worry about that. The sentence structure, vocabulary is all the same. So it's not a huge difference, except that every once in a while I'll say, boy, this character would more likely drop the F-bomb, but they can't because they're a 12-year-old in the middle grade book. But aside from that, it's not really a jarring transition.
Michelle, anybody who's met a 12-year-old would know. If you're going to go for realism, I get it. Sorry, go on, Jeff.
I can get away with that because, like, in the second book, which won't be until August, is Nightmare in the Backyard. And that there were points where, like, these kids would curse I can't say the curse word, but I can certainly say, you know, she cursed. And so that's
right.
You can get away with it that way.
Yeah.
I had a question for Bridget. I always ask Jeff, what is his favorite book that he's written? And it has changed throughout the years. So I want to ask Bridget, what is your favorite Jeff Strand novel?
Oh, my favorite Jeff Strand. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I was going to say, I don't know how to pick mine. Okay. So
I know it's very difficult.
So I really, really love Jeff's dark thriller type books, like Pressure, Deathless, My Pretties, those types of books. Those are probably my favorites. But my actual favorite Jeff Strand book is Kumquat, the romantic comedy.
I loved that.
Road trip comedy. Yeah, I love that book. It's the very first book that I ever read of his, all the way back in 2014. And it, to this day, it's still my favorite. Like, I love it so much. So
I love that answer.
Good.
No, I love that answer. I really do. And it's funny. The first book I read of Jeff's was Blister. And, of course, I said that was my absolute favorite. But it seems like every time I read one, I'm like, oh, no, hands down, that's my favorite. And then I read another one. Oh, nope, that's my favorite now. So but normally
– good.
Yeah, but yeah, and normally I do settle on my favorite being, Cyclops Road. I just love Cyclops Road,
so
and I
you
think
like
that
the more fantasy one.
You know, not normally. So that was just really good, and I do think that he left it open at the end for the next journey. So. Someday, I'm hoping that we get a Cyclops Road 2.
I'm imagining right now.
So we should just start bugging him now. But no, and I guess the same question for you, Bridget. Out of the stories that you've written, do you have a favorite?
I like some of my stories for different reasons. Like, I'm most proud of Jinx because it's just, I feel like it turned out exactly as I intended it to turn out. And that doesn't happen very often. But one of my favorites is actually, because I love body horror so much, I wrote a story called Spores, which is in a Bouquet of Viscera. And it's about a man who, he's in the West Virginia mountains and he comes across this fungus. And it starts coming out of his body. And just writing it made me sick. Like, it was so disgusting.
Oh,
like, made me cringe. But I love body horror, and honestly, that's probably my favorite story that I've written is Spores. So, which, again, is probably not what people are expecting, but that's my favorite.
Sounds so gross. Yeah, and yeah. And for you, if you could write any genre that you have not tried yet, what would it be?
I think I would write thrillers. That's actually what I read more than horror even. And I think I would probably try to write like a really hardcore thriller, you know, without the horror elements, just a pure thriller novel. That's kind of what I would like to write, I think. But I also keep trying to convince Jeff that we should do a romantic comedy collab.
Yes. Yes. Do it. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, I don't know. I'm so excited about that one. That would be awesome. You know, because, you know, you got Kumquat, which was such a great book, and I think that
I
is
know.
Great to do a combination. But I think we have a caller.
Oh, no.
Disconnect.
Yeah, right.
We do. I'm going to bring him on. Hello, caller.
Oh, hi. My name is Jeff Parsons.
Jeff,
hi,
how
Jeff.
You doing? We know it's you. How are you doing, sir?
That's most excellent day. Hope you're all doing fine as well.
Yeah, and I hear you like to call just to harass Jeff Strand.
Well, it's part of my admiration, you know, just to keep him a little bit off balance. But he has such a good sense of humor. It's really a lot of fun sport for me. And, you know, I've been following him for the longest time. He's an excellent writer. So this is just my way to keep in touch, I guess.
Awesome. Do you have a
All right, there's no need to disconnect
Jeff?
Him.
You can stay.
Just say the word. Just say the word.
No, he can stay. He's good.
Did you have any questions for him, or you just wanted to kind of say hey?
I just want to say congrats on both of your books, you know, Jeff and Bridget. That's awesome.
Tell me, are
Jeff's stories autobiographical, or is he just making all the stuff up?
I swear I think there's some autobiographical elements in his stories. He swears up and down there is not. So I guess I'll believe him on this instance. But yeah, I see Jeff in some of his characters. I just do.
And if she told you the truth, she'd have to kill you.
Correct.
I might come back though as a dummy. So hey, dummies, did you have to do any research on them, like interviewing them, or did they talk back much, or how's your meds doing and all that?
It was all secondhand research. I did not actually interview a dummy, but I did a lot of research into dummies and into New York City in 1938.
Oh, man, that was the heyday of ventriloquism. I think they had a book out called Dummies for Dummies or something like that. I don't know. Really, these things are just like animatronics in a way. They're just freaky as shit. Oop, not allowed to say that.
Oh, no, you're fine.
No, I mean, the scary part of that, how do you, like, bring that out? I mean,
a lot of times it's deep dive into the characters. So if the character is freaked out by the ventriloquist dummy that is suddenly no longer on the seat next to him, it sort of comes out, hopefully, for the reader. And then a lot of it is he is trapped with this dummy in a very dangerous situation, and the dummy makes things infinitely worse. So it's not a case of, you know, describing the dummy in so much detail that it freaks the reader out. You know what a dummy looks like. So it's kind of just letting the dummy do the work and telling the story.
In a way, you don't get too much into the character's mind. You just show the things that happen that would freak you out. Let's say, like...
No, I get into the hero's mind a lot. It's all deep point of view from his perspective. So a lot of it is in his mind. I'm not getting into the dummy's mind. But, I'm focusing on the story. It's not like a two-page description of the shadows falling against the dummy's face that freak him out. It's kind of, he's freaked out by the dummy. Here's what happens to him. Lots of bad things happen.
I was going to say, thank you so much for calling in, Jeff. You need to call in more often and say hi to us. But thank you for calling. We're about to run out of time here.
Cheers, Jeff.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
And I did want to say Samantha Hawkins did not get a chance to come on tonight, but she does say hi to both you and Bridget. And before we let you guys go, we'll start with Jeff. Tell us real quick where we can find you online.
You can find me online at www.jeffstrand.com. And if you're listening to this live or either after Tuesday, April 2nd, you can find it, Watches in the Dark, at your local bookstore.
Awesome. And Bridget?
You can find me at www.bridgetnelson.com. And through my website, you can find all my social media and my online bookstore and all of that stuff. So that's your one-go shopping.
Awesome. I thank you guys so much for coming on the show, and we definitely have to do it again, and I will schedule a little bit better and we'll have even longer time. But for all of our listeners out there, go out and find Creep Out and It Watches in the Dark and Poison Pink. And thank you guys so much for being on the show. I can't wait to have you back.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us. We'll be back very soon.
Thanks a lot, guys. Yeah, and we'll see you again very soon. Have a great night.
Feel better, James.
Yeah, I'm working on it. I mean, unless it's COVID, but tune in next week. Tune in next week to see if James has actually survived. So that'll be exciting. Have a great rest of your evening, guys.
Good night.
Good night.
Okay, bye-bye. It is, and I've survived it. I've coughed a little bit through this, but the show must go on, as they say. You know, we're nothing if not professionals, but time has beaten us, and it is time to say goodnight, Xtina.
Woo! Goodnight, Xtina.
Good night.